Today, so this is all in the Bob room. Today we are going to start a new topic. So we are going to talk about integer quantum Hall effect. And we will spend most of this week discussing various aspects of integer and also fractional quantum Hall effect. System we will be interested in is looks deceptively simple. So we will simply consider a two-dimensional electron gas, some 2D electron gas, subject to strong magnetic field, which is perpendicular to the plane in which the electron gas lives, and with some amount of disorder, which scatters the electrons. So our ingredients are, we only need three simple ingredients. 2D electron gas, strong B field, and some amount of disorder. We're gonna ask what are the transport properties of the system. And you will see that physics is extremely rich, and in fact, thinking about the system stimulated really, really a lot of important concepts over the past 30 years. So let us actually start with the simple limit, which we know how to deal with the limit of weak magnetic field. And let's see what are the transport properties. So limit of weak field. In this case, you know that Drude picture is still valid, and we just need to slightly modify it in order to find the conductivity tensor. Drude theory is still valid. Okay, so let us use the simplest classical version of the Drude theory, where we are thinking about the drift velocities of electrons. But keep in mind that the result we will obtain can be also derived more rigorously using kinetic equations. So the way you did it in the tutorial for the case of no magnetic field. So in the simplest picture, though, what you do, you think about all electrons drifting with some averaged velocity, which is essentially proportional, which is determined by the force that the electrons experience, and scattering time and their mass, right? So you just say, okay, so there is a force that accelerates electrons, and then after time tau, they get scattered from disorder and they lose their velocity. So then they get accelerated again. So this would be their averaged velocity. So tau is the scattering time. Now, what changes when you have magnetic field is that the electrons experience the Lorentz force, but that's the only thing that changes compared to the usual case. So let me write the force like that. So there is electric field, and then there is the Lorentz force, which is simply given by the vector product of the B field and the drift velocity. Okay. So now let's remember that the current density is related to the drift velocity in a very simple manner. So it's just the density of electrons, electron charge times the drift velocity. Okay, and let's use this fact to express current density in terms of the electric field, which effectively gives you the conductivity. So once you do that, you obtain the following relation between electric field and the current density. So it is convenient to describe this relation by introducing the resistivity tensor, which essentially relates electric field to the current density as follows. So it's a matrix, right? Tensor which looks like that. JY. Yeah. Right. It should be like that. Yeah. So I can write it like that. So I will write like B, and then I will write tensor product with the unit Z vector. Right. So that B is the scalar here, right? And I explicitly take into account that the magnetic field is directed along the axis. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks. So in here it's also here. It's J cross Z times the absolute value of B, right? So of course in the absence of magnetic field the off diagonal components of the resistivity tensor are zero, but now they become non-zero, and from this relation we can easily extract the resistivity tensor, and what you get is the following relatively simple answer. So here you get now notice that rho yx is simply minus rho xy, and you can see that this is always true because of rotational invariance. So what we got is effectively that the XX component of the resistivity tensor did not change compared to the case of no magnetic field, but we have added rho XY component, which is simply B over NEC. Right, this is what you get if you multiply this prefactor and this. So somewhat surprising aspect of this result is that it does not depend on disorder. You can see that it only depends on the electron density and on the magnetic field. Now let me also introduce cyclotron frequency. So we will need it. We will use it a lot in the following. So which is simply EB over MC. So this is the frequency with which frequency of the periodic motion of the electron in the magnetic field. Okay, so then I can rewrite this result in an even simpler form. So I will say that rho is equal to the resistivity at zero field times the matrix, which is 1 omega c tau minus omega c tau 1. Okay, so now when is this result still reliable? So implicitly, right, we assumed that we can describe the effect of the magnetic field in some average sense, right? So this means that effectively that the magnetic field deflects the electrons very very weakly between the scattering events. Right, so because you see that if we make the magnetic field stronger and stronger, and it starts making cyclotron motion sort of faster than scattering of disorder, right, the whole thing would break down, and the Drude picture would break down. So this result is valid as long as the cyclotron motion is slow, such that omega c tau is much less than one. Now of course people knew for a very long time, but what they discovered much more recently, about only about 30 years ago, is the following. So they discovered that once you crank up magnetic field, or degrees disorder such that omega c tau becomes greater than one, then the nature of transport completely changes. And this is the regime in which you find the quantum Hall effects. So let me just summarize the basic experimental facts. And then we will, later on in the lecture, we will develop a picture of how to understand at least some of them. So of quantum Hall effect. So and quote QHE. So basic fact is that over a range of magnetic fields, of B fields in this regime, rho xy is quantized and given by simply some number times the resistance quantum H over squared, which we already encountered when we looked at the conductivity of the quantum wires. So here this nu can be either integer 2, 3 and so on, or it can be could be a fraction, and many fractions have been observed. So 1/3, 2/3, 5ths, 2/5, you know, 11ths, and so on. And even so, you can see most of these fractions have odd denominators, but also there is a couple of fractions which have even denominators, and those turn out to be especially interesting. Now, simultaneously, the diagonal component of the conductivity vanishes, right? So over and as you vary field in some range, the values of the conductivity and resistivity tensors remain quantized and they don't change. Okay, so this is quite surprising because this means that there is effectively no dissipation, right? So this has been observed in transistor-like devices, right? So in transistor-like devices, recently also in several other materials, including graphene that we discussed, also in multi-layers graphene. So for example, in bilayer graphene and so on. There are other examples recently. So this effect is, so some features, right? So this effect is remarkably universal. So it is independent of the, you know, if you increase magnetic field by a factor of 2, if you change amount of disorder to some degree, if you change band structure, right? It's very, very generic. And the degree of this quantization is extremely precise. So in the best devices, you can use this effect to fix the ratio of the resistance quantum to the precision, which is I think 10 to the minus 8 or even greater these days, right? So and because of that, this phenomenon is used to define resistance standard. So we're going to develop the picture of this effect, but qualitatively turns out there is a really big difference between the integer quantum Hall effect and the fractional quantum Hall effect. So the underlying physics is quite different. So in the integer case, the basic physics is comes from the fact that the magnetic field completely changes the nature of the spectrum and forms Landau levels. So it's Landau levels, and as we will see in a second, disorder is really crucial. And in the fractional case, turns out that in addition, you have to worry about electron interactions. So in fact, it is electron interactions then that cause electrons to form a strongly correlated state with very unusual properties. So with you know, in particular, the emergent excitations are fractionally charged, they have anionic statistics, and so on. So here interactions. In addition to Landau levels and disorder, you have to worry about interactions. Okay. So first, let's think why is disorder crucial. So and to understand that, let's consider a very idealized system which has no disorder at all, and we will quickly see that then something like that is completely impossible. So why is disorder crucial? So let's consider 2D electron gas without any disorder. And in this case, our task is much simpler because then we can use the Lorentz invariance to obtain the behavior of the resistivity tensor. Right, so then assume no disorder, assume very clean 2D electron gas, right, and use Lorentz invariance. So let's do the following. Let's go to the frame which moves. So this is our rest frame where, you know, electrons just rest and there is no current. So let's do a Lorentz transformation and go to the frame which moves with the velocity minus v. You'll see why I choose such a sign. In this frame, the you know, assuming that v is much less than c, magnetic field is still the same, but we have generated the electric field, right? So generated, so moving frame, generated electric field, which is simply minus V over C times B, right? So we've generated electric field like that, and in addition, we have induced a current, right? Because now all the electrons are moving with the velocity v in this frame. So it's current is simply minus NEV. Okay? So now you see that since this moving frame is in principle no different, right? We can use this to obtain the relation between the current and electric field in the presence of magnetic field. So simply express, you know, V via J, substitute it here, and then you're going to get that E equals B over NEC J times B times Z. Sorry, right, because I pulled B here. You see, this is a very simple result, which tells you that the current, right, current and electric field are perpendicular with such a relation between them. So this tells you that the resistivity tensor is simply, so both diagonal components are zero, right? Because there is no current flowing along electric field, but the off diagonal ones are non-zero, right? And given remarkably by the same results that we already obtained here, right? That we obtained here. So now you have the result. So for example, if you plot the whole resistivity as a function of the magnetic field, you will see that it's simply a straight line with a slope given by 1 over electron density. Right? Now, so this is a trivial straight line. Now this is very different from the experimental observation because, as I told you, over ranges of magnetic field, the whole resistivity is quantized in the experiment. So
it is consistent with
Well, so let's plot the experimental result, and we will see that it's quite different, right? So if we this is consistent with what happens at very low field, but this is not, right? You're right in the sense that at some points this would still be true, but right. It's going to be true only at certain points.
But that's just because you're working with a totally.
Exactly. So I'm using this argument to show that when we think about the system, disorder is crucial, right? And without disorder, there will be no quantum Hall effect. Mm-hmm. So, but if you plot experimental curve on top of this, what you find is very different. So overall, it sort of follows this line, of course, because we know that at very low fields, it should be exactly the same, right? But as you go to higher fields, you see something very striking. So you see that Hall resistivity behaves like that. So it has steps, right, where its value is constant and it's given by the 1 over nu h over e squared, right? So at the points where the electron density is such that this expression would give you some integer times h over e squared, indeed this result is correct. But you see that the overall, that the qualitative pattern is very different. And then you see, what you find is that as the system gets cleaner and cleaner, you start getting more and more fractions. So you start getting more and more steps, and some of them become fractional and so on. You see lots and lots of fractions in very clean systems. And each fractions, you know, even though it corresponds to very similar physical observation, right, can host very different underlying state with different statistics, different charge of excitations, and so on. Okay, so but this just convinces us that the disorder really plays central role in this whole business. So now let's start our analysis of the strong magnetic field limit, and let's start. So next we're going to switch to the quantum dynamics. Of electrons in a strong B field, right? As opposed to the classical dynamics, where we assume that, you know, effectively electrons still have Fermi surface, they still form an electron gas, right, with the usual dispersion relation. So now let's take an opposite limit. So let's take a limit where magnetic field is the most important thing, and let's find the spectrum, right, and we will find that the spectrum is completely changed by the magnetic field, right? So first step is to find spectrum. Effectively, we will get the Landau levels, which most of you are familiar with. So, and again, for one more second, we will ignore disorder and we will include it in a second, right? So to find the spectrum, in the magnetic field, we need to choose a particular gauge of the vector potential, and it will be convenient for our purposes today to choose the Landau gauge. And you can easily see that this corresponds, that if you take the curl of this vector potential, you will end up with the magnetic field, which is pointed along z axis. So then our Hamiltonian takes the following form. Right, so here notice that this Hamiltonian seemingly breaks translational invariance, right? Because so it looks asymmetric with respect to x and y, right? So now to see that the system is still translationally invariant, you need to you need to supplement the usual translation by a gauge transformation. So, you know, it's clearly not invariant if you simply, if you do the naive translation, right? But if you, right, so this doesn't work, but if you do the following, if you, you can simply shift, you can still simply shift the y coordinate, right? So this is still good. But if you do the x, if you're shifting x coordinate, you should also multiply your wave function by a phase, which is given by the py times the distance by which you want to shift. So this you can check on your own. Right, so now the transformations of the translations are have to be modified, right? So, but let's not go into this property for a second, and let's simply solve this Hamiltonian. So you see that the y momentum is conserved, and we can just choose it to be equal to some value. So let me call it ky. So, and I can choose the wave function to have the following simple form. So I can separate the variables, right? Now the part of the wave function which depends on the x will be described by a simpler one-dimensional equation with the effective Hamiltonian hky. Right, so I'm keeping ky as an index here. Ky of x where hky. So let me write down the new one-dimensional Hamiltonian. So it's simply 1 over 2m minus ih dx squared plus 1 over 2 omega c squared x plus ky l squared squared. So here we have a couple, so here we have one new quantity appearing, which is the magnetic length, simply hc over eb, okay? And also we have cyclotron frequency. So, and just so you have some sense of the number, so this magnetic length is given, so it's 26 nanometers divided by square root magnetic field in Tesla, right? So at one Tesla, it's 26 nanometers, so quite a small scale. Now, this Hamiltonian is, of course, very simple. It's simply the displaced harmonic oscillator with frequency omega c and with the parabola potential shifted by the amount, let me call it x, which depends on ky, which is minus ky l squared. Right, so we see that this shift of the oscillator depends on the momentum in the y direction, right? So you see that the magnetic field effectively entangles the x and y coordinates, right? They're no longer independent in some sense. So the spectrum we can write down very simply. So spectrum looks as follows. So there are discrete oscillator levels labeled by n, right? So it's simply n plus 1/2 h omega c. And you see that the spectrum is independent on this x. And by the way, x is called so-called guiding center position. You'll see in a second why. Center position. And the corresponding wave function is given by so this is usual Hermite polynomial. Okay. So let's keep this for a second and let's plot the resulting energy, right? So energy bands are discrete, so they go like that, h omega c over 2, 3 h omega c over 2, 5 h omega c over 2, and so on, right? And the wave functions, if we plot them, so in the y direction, the wave function is trivial, it's just a plane wave, but in the x direction, it's not. So if I plot the corresponding wave functions for some set of ky's, they look like that. So this is simply, let's say, if you look at the zeros Landau level, right? This is the zeros Landau level. So then the wave functions are simply harmonic oscillator orbitals which are centered at the x, which corresponds to the ky you chose, right? So for different ky's, they would look like that, right? Simply zeros levels of the harmonic oscillators, which are which have finite support, right? If you go to higher Landau levels, to first, second, then you have to think about about the excited states of the harmonic oscillator, which look like that, right? So, and here I plotted the wave function. So wave function of the nth Landau level. So is this part clear? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So one really striking property of this is that the energy levels really, really have massive degeneracy, right? You see that instead of, so we started with a band, you know, which had a continuous dispersion, right? So E of k, and we ended up with a discrete set of bands, which are, and each band is completely flat. So let's find the number of states in each of these bands. So for that purpose, let us consider finite sample, which has a size Lx in the x direction and Ly in y direction, right? And you can see that the form of the orbitals tells you how many values of the ky are allowed, because you see that this guiding center position should be between zero and Lx, right? Because physically the states have to reside inside this sample, right? This translates into the condition for ky, because remember that x is simply proportional to ky, right? So you get that ky should be greater than zero, less than Lx over L squared. And now, so the number of states, it's number of the states is related to interval of values of ky in the usual manner. So it's just the system size in the y direction times the density of states, which is proportional simply to zero to maximum allowed value of ky, dky over 2 pi, over 2 pi simply, right? Now using this result and this, we get very simple answer that number of states within the given Landau level is given by Lx Ly over 2 pi L squared. Right, so this tells you that there is exactly one state per area 2 pi L squared. And you can easily see that this means one state per the area enclosed by the by the area pierced by the unit flux of the magnetic field. Because so let's find the flux through this area. It will be 2 pi L squared times B, right? So flux equals 2 pi. Remember definition of L, so it becomes HC over EB times B. So this gives you 2 pi h, which is the h without bar, hc over e. So this is the flux quantum, all right? So this gives us the answer about the spectrum in the presence of magnetic field. We can also, another useful thing we can see from this result is, again, what are the limits on disorder under which the Landau levels still exist and don't get all mixed up, right? So effectively, disorder broadening, right? So if you have, if you now introduce disorder with some scattering time tau, then the disorder broadening, you know, simply by the uncertainty principle, would be given by broadening would be given by H over tau, right? So in the disorder situation, you would, you know, the disorder would mix up states with different KYs, right? You'll have to do some kind of degenerate perturbation theory, and you will end up with a new set of eigenstates. But qualitatively, you know that that the width of this broadened band must be of the order of H over tau. So, and it's clear that the limit of weak disorder corresponds to the situation where this broadening is smaller than the distance between different Landau levels, right? So you get, so weak disorder would correspond to H over tau being much less than the separation between Landau levels, which is H omega C. Right, so this corresponds to omega c tau being much greater than 1. So, yeah.
Is this exactly equivalent to saying that the mean free path should be larger than a cyclotron radius?
Right, exactly, yeah. So it's in this here I'm being a bit sloppy and thinking about the low-lying Landau level such that the cyclotron radius is effectively the same as the magnetic length. Right, but you're right that if we were to do it more carefully and went to some higher Landau levels, this would be exactly the condition that the cyclotron radius is much smaller than the mean free path, right? So this condition is opposite to the condition of weak disorder under which the Drude theory is still good.
Mm-hmm. So it's just saying that it can go all the way around more than once.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Such that this also tells us that then If this is what the orbits look like, right? If the orbits look like that mostly, right? And maybe they're only weakly influenced by disorder, then the way we need to think about the spectrum is exactly in terms of the Landau levels, because then we need to quantize this closed orbits and we'll find the Landau levels as opposed to the limit where we have a lot of disorder, right? So then our motion looks something like that, right? And then the trajectories through the system are still unbounded, so then you're back to the continuum spectrum and no Landau levels. Mm-hmm. Okay. So now let's proceed to thinking about the transport within Landau levels, because this is what we ultimately want. So how can the states carry current? So first of all, it is clear that if you have a perfect Landau level, no electric field, no disorder, then there can be no current because it's flat, right? Because it's flat, and if you are to find the velocity with which things are moving, so velocity it's always some d epsilon over some dk, right? So since this is always the same within a given Landau level, this is always zero. So there will be no current. So, for us, it will be useful to actually write down the current carried by a single state within a Landau level. So we will use it in a second. You'll see why it's useful. So, current within Landau level. And let me again, so in most of our discussion from now on, we will assume that disorder is weak such that we can limit our attention to a single Landau level, right? This will make things a lot easier. So consider single Landau level, single Landau level. And let's concentrate on the lowest Landau level, n equals 0. Then the wave function of the state ky is, we just found it, so it's given by the following expression. So it's 1 over square root 2 pi power 1 half ly. So this just comes from normalizing the oscillator wave function, the iky y minus 1 over 2 l squared x minus x squared. So, and let's find the current carried by the state. So J is given by the ky minus e times the velocity, which is, so velocity is changed compared to the case of non-magnetic field. So effectively, to usual ratio of p over m, you need to add the vector potential. Right. So now let's just use this form and simply calculate this matrix element. So you can write it like that. Integral. So once again, so we are so in a sense it's clear that thinking about this gauge and about the states, we only can get non-trivial current in the y direction eventually, right? So let's consider only the y component of the current. So averaged. So this becomes hky plus eb over c times x, right, times the square of this wave function. Squared x minus x squared. Right. Now, okay, so I can easily rewrite it as follows. So I can say this is minus e omega c square root 2 pi l. So I just pulled out this one in front. Integral dx x minus x to the minus 1 over l squared x minus x squared. Now, okay, it's clear that this factor is antisymmetric, so the whole thing is 0. Right, so it's 0 because no dispersion, right? There is no dispersion to the states and they can carry no current. Velocity is 0, right? Their group velocity is always 0. Current 0. Now, of course, in this answer, there is some remnant of the usual quasi-classical physics. You see that effectively the sort of part of the wave function which lives here carries the so then this density, current density, is positive, so it carries the positive current. But if it lives here, it carries negative current, right? So this is a remnant of the usual cyclotron motion. Here you're moving this way, here you're moving the other way. So the way to actually get current is to change this condition that the Landau level is completely flat, right? And this can be accomplished by either disorder or by electric field, right? So let's consider an important modification of this picture. So let's add electric field. And let's see that in fact it will introduce current. Right, so and let's add electric field in the x direction. So the potential adding would be EEX, right? Advantage of such a choice is that the translational symmetry in the y direction is still obvious, so we can still keep labeling the eigen states by the momentum ky. Right, so then our 1D Hamiltonian in the x direction is modified very slightly. So we just take our old result, which was here, right? So we take this result and add the potential, right? So hky, it's hky, no electric field plus V of R, which is E big E X. You see that this is effectively an oscillator in an electric field, right? So again, a problem we can solve very easily. So what the electric field does is two things. So first of all, it changes the center of the oscillator, right? So we could pull this under the potential, right? Under the pull it under here, and you see it will change the guiding center position, right? So once we do that, we obtain the wave function. So the only change of the wave function is that the guiding center position changed, so it becomes x minus ee over m omega c squared, so which you can check by just solving this Hamiltonian, and the energy also changed, right? So energy of course changed, so it's the original energy of the Landau level plus ee x, right, guiding center position, plus 1/2 m v squared, where v simply determined by the e over b. Okay, so and now let's use this modified wave functions to calculate the current, and we will see that now it becomes non-zero. So again, the derivation is very similar, right? Except now we have to shift the guiding center position, right? So, and I can simply use this answer but instead of x, I plug x prime. And then you find that now average current carried by one state is simply what we had before. So it's e omega c square root 2 pi l integral dx x minus x prime. So let me plug x prime. So x plus ee m omega c squared minus 1 l squared x minus x squared, right? This part will give me 0 under integration, so I only keep this part. And this will give me e omega c times ee over m omega c squared, right? So, and once I simplify it and use the definition of omega c, I get a very simple answer. So it's simply velocity of light, electric field divided by b. So it's this velocity v. Okay. So this tells you that all the electrons are now moving with the same velocity in the direction perpendicular to the electric field, right? And the quasi-classical analogy of this is obvious. This is the usual drift of electrons in across E and B fields, right? So with this being the drift velocity. So you know that if you take B and E field, right, then the classical electron would drift, right? So it will go this, it will go this way, but then it will drift in this direction, right, velocity v. So another way to obtain this answer would be actually to find the group velocity. So you could have said, okay, instead of doing this calculation, I could just take the derivative of the new energy, right, with respect to the ky, and then I will see that since x depends on ky, right, there is this term under differentiation would give me ee dx dky. So it's simply e times e over magnetic length squared, right? So it's ee divided by hc. So let's see. So ky, so something is wrong here. Uh-huh. Okay, so I have to in fact multiply it by L squared, right? And then I get the right answer. So because k, so x is ky L squared, right? So L squared goes to the top. So then it's EE times L squared, which is HC over EB. Right, so then I get, and then H should be cancels with this H, right? So then I get again the same answer, right? So effectively, what does it mean? So this means that in the if you now plot the dispersion, plot the energy as a function of ky or guiding center position, so they're in fact the same, right? You find that the now Landau levels acquire dispersion. So before they were flat, right? Now they depend linearly on the effectively on the guiding center position or on the effectively local value of the potential created by the electric field, right? So which means that the and the slope is constant such that the effective velocity is simply derivative of is simply this, right? And it's just a constant, right? So bottom line that so the message we get from here is that so under electric field Landau levels tilt and carry current. Tilt carry current. So now let's use this result to understand what happens in the realistic sample with disorder and with which is finite, right? So let's now consider actually let me keep this, but we are gonna what is it? Oh, okay. Oh, thanks. So let's consider realistic sample, finite size. And some disorder, but let's for now assume that the disorder has a very simple form and only depends on the x coordinate. So it's still translational invariant in the y direction. So v is function of only x, right? So and let me model the edges of the sample in a very simple way by sending the v to infinity as the x goes to either first edge or to the second edge. Right, so this effectively tells you that the electrons cannot go past the edges. Right, so this is my sample. And the v of x, so if I plot v of x, right, it will look like that. So it will be infinity at the boundaries. And then it will be something in between, right? So it can fluctuate, it can do whatever I want. Under this assumption, ky is still conserved. So I can still think of my states in exactly the same sense as before, right? From our analysis of what happens to Landau levels under electric field, we can conclude that if now I plot the energy of the Landau level as a function of ky, it will effectively roughly follow this potential, right? So it will be, you know, let's say at this point the disorder creates some electric field this way, so Landau level will be tilted this way, then it will follow the electric field created by disorder, until at the edge, the energy of the Landau level will sort of skyrocket and go to infinity. Right? Now, what is important that the next Landau level will be displaced, so it will look similar, but it will be displaced by the cyclotron frequency, so it will look like that, and so on. Right? So this is the spectrum in the disordered sample. Now let's ask what happens when I put the chemical potential in between the two Landau levels. So let me put chemical potential here. Then you see that none of the states in the bulk, which are filled, can contribute to transport, right? They're simply filled, and that's the end of it. But you can see that chemical potential always crosses the Landau levels at the edges of the sample, right? And as we understood from this simple calculation, if your chemical potential is somewhere here, right, these states carry current. Right, so this tells you that there is nothing happening in this situation. There is nothing happening in the bulk, and all the current happens at the edges. Yeah.
I have a question. In the real experiment, how do people use chemical potential?
Right. Yeah. This is a very good question. So there is a couple of ways. So depending on the material, there is a couple of ways. So historically, people were looking at the transistor-like devices where the density itself is not tunable, right? So they had to tune magnetic field, because effectively, relation between chemical potential and density also depends on the magnetic field, right? So as you crank up magnetic field, you know, you start with filling lots of Landau levels, then you crank up magnetic field, and the number of states within each Landau level grows, right? So at a given density, you have to empty higher Landau levels and go to lower Landau levels. So eventually, at very high fields, all the electrons reside in the lowest Landau level. Now in graphene, for example, you can tune density in a given device by a gate, and so I will tell a little more about it. So there, you can keep the magnetic field constant and change the density of carriers simply tuning this. Tuning the chemical potential.
But now people usually tune by gate.
In graphene, yes. In MOSFETs, it's much harder. Those devices are usually not gated. There are some advances, but it's much harder to gate them. So this tells us that all the current, right, current carried by edge states. By edge states, and in this situation, there is nothing at the bulk. Now, another important thing, very important property of the edge states is that they're chiral. You see that their dispersion here, right? So their velocity is d epsilon over dky. So it's positive on one edge at x equal lx and negative at x equal zero. Right, so it tells you that here they move like that, and here they move in the opposite direction. So this now it's clear from this picture that the edge states can be viewed as the right moving and left moving particles in the quantum wire, except now they're specially separated. Right, so remember what we discussed last time. So there we had, you know, if you simply consider 1D wire, right, so contrast to 1D wire, and plot epsilon as a function of k y, it will be something like that, right? So then there is chemical potential, right? So there is a right moving channel and left moving channel, but now, because of this very special structure of Landau levels, k y corresponds to the position in the x direction, right? So you ended up with a very unusual situation where the right movers and left movers are live far away from each other. So current current carried by these edge states is calculated in exactly the same way as the current in the quantum wire. So you can again use the Landauer formalism that we developed last week, and you can repeat this calculation yourself very easily, and what you will find is that the current in such a device is given simply by minus E over H times chemical potential in the let's say left edge state minus chemical potential in the right edge state. And the voltage is obviously given by difference in the chemical potentials divided by the electron charge, right? And now think about it. So this is exactly the whole voltage you would measure, right? So you're passing current through your device in this direction, and you would make some probes here and measure the whole voltage between them. So from these two simple formulas, you get the whole resistance, which would be simply, right, for the case of a single channel, it will be simply H over E squared. If you have, let's say, N channels now, it will be simply, right, you just need to put N in front of the current, right? So if many channels, then current is N E over H mu L minus mu R, and then Rho xy is simply 1 over N H over E squared. Okay, so this tells you that the due to the edge states, the whole resistance is quantized, and effectively you're dealing with one or more open channels. Now, of course, the precision of this quantization will be much greater than in a quantum wire, because in order to backscatter, right, you need to go all the way from the right edge to the left edge. And such processes would be very weak. Okay, so and this is effectively the reason why the quantum Hall effect is so precise. Okay, so let's stop here for today, and so please ask questions if anything is unclear. Why don't we so we started you see we can still pick the y momentum, right? Because py still commutes with the Hamiltonian, right? Then I fix it, and then I obtain the effective 1D Hamiltonian, right? So here the motion in the y direction is already gone. Right, this is what you're asking, why it doesn't affect KY, right? Or
question is that for fixed y KY, we had expression for wave function, and it had x there in the exponent. And
right, right.
Why this x doesn't change?
Ah, okay. Ah, yeah. This is a good question. So here I was right. So you mean why here when we were calculating why we didn't change, why we didn't shift it? Right, so this is a good question. Of course, it does change, right? So it should be x minus x prime, but here it's still, you know, velocity did not change. So velocity. So here I tricked you and I did this shift already, right? So in fact, it would be like that: x minus x, x minus x prime. So if you it's good. You noticed, right? But then if you change variables and say okay x to x minus x prime, right? Then you will be back to what I wrote. Mm-hmm. Okay, guys. Any more questions? Okay. If not, let's continue tomorrow at 10:15.